but it's nice to be here this morning. I confess I'm a bit nervous and feeling a bit shambolic, but let's hope things go okay in the next few minutes. And about you, I identify with Marco when she says I don't watch the news so often these days. I used to watch it at lunchtime and then in the evening. I get so fed up halfway through the lunchtime one that I watch a quiz show instead of the evening, I have to say. And it's not just a problem, as it were, in terms of the big out there, is it? Somebody once said to me, life is bad, and then you die. And the more I move around amongst my neighbours and friends, the more I think that's probably just about it. So much pain. So much, especially over the last couple of years of bereavement, or hurting because of illness. So much struggling and need. Many people frustrated, overworked, angry. I keep bumping into people who've been traumatized by things that have been done to them. People who just feel numb. If we once had a pandemic of COVID, we have a pandemic of society, everybody. Lots of us feel that we are victims. Nobody cares. And some of us are winners, but I look and read the newspaper about those who are winners, who earn in 2 or 3 weeks what I earn in about 10 years. And they don't seem to be any more satisfied or at peace either. 2 weeks ago when I was preaching here, I read a song from my youth by Paul McCartney and John Lennon. It rang bells with a lot of people, so I'm going to read it again because I rather like it and it's haunted me since those 2 weeks ago. This is how the song goes. I'm not going to sing it, don't panic. Oh, look at all those lonely people. Oh, look at all the lonely people. Eleanor Rigby picks up the rice in the church where a wedding has been, lives in a dream, waits at the window, wearing the face that she keeps in a jar by the door. Who is it for? All the lonely people. Where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Father McKenzie, writing the words of a sermon that no one will hear, no one comes near. Look at him working, darning socks in the night when there's nobody there. What does he care? All the lonely people, where do they all come from? All the lonely people, where do they all belong? Oh, look at all the lonely people. Look at all the lonely people. Eleanor Rigby died in the church and was buried along with her name. Nobody came. Father McKenzie, wiping the dirt from his hand as he walks from the grave. No one was saved. All the lonely people. Oh, look at all the lonely people. Where do they all belong? Where do we belong? Where's our home? Is everything pointless and boring and useless and ending in nothingness? Is there nothing better? Are they right? No one was rescued, no one was saved. And I find myself thinking as I look at the political things that I would jolly well like to see less change. And then I think, what would I like to see change in me? I was actually in that option. I'd really rather be. I'd really rather be supported on that. So much bad news, and yet I'm supposed to be talking on, have I got good news for you? It's interesting, the book that Margot read before I read, it's a book written by Mark, who was a young man about the time of Jesus. You read this story of Jesus, he called it right in the beginning, this is the good news about Jesus. And in the story that you read just now, will you notice that there was a house absolutely packed out, and all that was happening inside was Jesus was talking, and everybody seemed to be wanting to be there. In fact, even the overflow of it outside was just crowded out. What on earth was he talking about? Well, Mark summarizes what the good news was. He says, the time's come. The kingdom of God's come near. Repent. Go in a different direction and trust the good news. Jesus was saying to these people, there is a new option in life. A chance to go in a new direction. Where you want the God to make you take charge. I was speaking in a gathering a little bit smaller than this in China, and one young man stood up in it, quite embarrassing really for everybody else. He said, I've made a mess of my life. I need to get back in harmony with the one who made me. That was precisely what Jesus was saying, to get back in harmony with the one who made me. And everything, there was a full house for this. Because Jesus was saying, there's a different direction for people to go in, and it's good news because it brings hope. A group of philosophers once said to me, about Christianity is it gives you hope. Get us for now. Hope die. People often ask me, how does this good news work? And Mark doesn't give us a philosophical treatise. What Mark does for us is he gives us two stories. Well, actually, he gives us loads of stories. You should read the whole book and you see story after story after story of what Jesus does to change different people's lives. And here was read to us by Margot two stories, really. One about somebody who was paralyzed and one about somebody who was prosperous. The key thing is they both got something in common. They're both messed up. Paralyzed one is messed up. Maybe it was an accident. I don't know. Maybe he did something dark. I don't know. Maybe he had an illness. Bad luck. Maybe it was somebody worked him over. Wrecked him. There's plenty of that going on. One another messed up. The other one, the prosperous one, was messed up. He made some pretty bad decisions in his life. He didn't belong anymore with most of society. They wouldn't come near him. He had plenty of mates. They'd all chosen the wrong way as well and were messed up. Let's start with the paralyzed man. Who he is, he's suffering, he's broken. He tries to get in with the help of some friends and shut out. Nobody's interested in him. Everybody's preoccupied with their own stuff. Everybody just looking after themselves. Somebody said to me the other day, where I come from, everybody's just not looking after themselves. There's nobody to look for me. And it's a problem, perhaps especially for the disabled. But there are four blokes who care about this. Why do they care about this? Mark just tells us one thing about them. He says they had faith. They believed in Jesus. Interesting, isn't it? Sometimes I do a lot of work with international students, and when I work with international students, sometimes they say to me, I say to them, why are you here? And they say, well, these people care for us and we feel safe here. And they say, can you explain why it is? And I try my best. I sort of say, well, these Christian people, they've got to know God and he's poured out his love in them. And there's a sort of wee bit of overflow and you're probably getting it. And that's a very interesting sort of concept, isn't it? Now, of course, there are pretty lousy Christians down, but actually, if you're close to Jesus, there will be an overflow of love. Sometimes even if you wish it weren't there, an overflow of love can happen. And this man is loved by these three blokes, and they're actually a bit loopy about it. They're a bit crazy. They've ripped the roof off, because as far as they're concerned, nothing is going to stop them from getting their mate to Jesus. And it says they had faith. What sort of faith was it to go there? It was faith in what Jesus is like. They actually believed, if they got him to Jesus, that Jesus was interested in this messed up bloke. That Jesus did something for this person. He believed that that was the sort of Jesus that he was. I remember one time saying to a Japanese man, the God who made everything loves you. And he, with his 8 million gods, as Japanese culture does have, looked rather bewildered and says, I mean to say there's a God interested in me. And these guys believe that God, not society, true, but God is interested in this person, that Jesus cares about him. They believe not only that he's interested, but that he can do something. What's the point of bringing him if they believe he's just going to go back as messed up as he was before? No. Believes that Jesus can do something, and they believe that his agenda is to do something good for the messed up people. And so they rip the roof off. Probably quite expensive, because they could hardly expect a house owner to pay for the repair. But they are determined, aren't they? And what they encounter is that Jesus cares. But Jesus saw that they trusted him. Then probably all five of them trusted, because Jesus, when he draws near to people, has this ability to believe that you can do something. But Jesus has a rather unexpected agenda, doesn't he? Son, he says, you're insufficient. That's not what they came for goodness sake. They came so his legs would work. And other people are really put out. Who does he think he is saying sins can be forgiven? That's God's job. It's sort of what some people sort of say to me. You can't really know whether you're all right or not until you die and you see Jesus or you see God, you meet God. When you meet God, you'll find out whether you've done enough or not and that sort of stuff. But the people around were saying, nobody can be sure if they've really got sorted out with God. Nobody can be sure if they've got harmony with him. You've got to wait until you die for that. But Jesus looks at it differently. Your sins are untied. You're set free from all that rubbish that you carry. You see, for Jesus, peace with God is our greatest need. Though broken legs and other problems are also of concern to him. He knows. This passage teaches us our deepest needs. Not the ones that show, but the ones that perhaps don't show. He knows people need harmony with God. When I was a student, I used to work as a binman. Grants were never enough, even though my parental income was such that it was quite a reasonable grant. I remember talking with a guy one day, he says, yeah, I reckon there's a God, and sometimes he loves me and sometimes he hates me, and I reckon he pretty much hates me at the moment. Jesus says, I want to put you right with him first. In my life, I've known three people who got paralyzed. One of them wasn't healed and spent her life in a wheelchair. She worked in a hospital and helped lots of people to find peace with God. She was a joyful person. Another person I knew was partially healed. He always walked with a limp. He worked with disadvantaged island people, getting justice for them and helping them find peace with God. He was deeply fulfilled. There's another one I know who was completely healed. To this day is sad and angry, bitter, no peace. Jesus says, I want you to have peace with God first of all. That's the number one problem. But he doesn't say the other problems are rubbish in this story, does he? He gives him peace with God and legs that work, because Jesus is practical. He says, the kingdom of God has come near. I want you to think about what it means to come near and not actually be all here. If something's coming near, you get a taste and a whiff of it, don't you? I want to say to you that in the Christian life, God always gives you signs that you've got sorted with him. He doesn't sort out all the problems at once. You've got to wait until he comes back into that. But in the meantime, he will do definite things for you so that it's worth it. And on the table at the back, if you want, you might like to see this. Try praying. A little bit. Give it a go. Experiment and see that Jesus is actually alive and does things when you learn to talk to him. But his goal is not just for experiments, for life in harmony with him. Now, secondly, and more briefly, the prosperous man. His name is Levi, we're told. And Levi is an interesting guy. Tax collectors in those days were not just civil servants. They were far more corrupt than that. They worked a system, made an awful lot of money. The only friends he had were in the same mess with him. It's clear from other accounts of this and more details that other books in the Bible give that this guy was not at peace. And Jesus ambushed him. I love that, don't you? He's walking past, he sees him at his work and he says, follow me. And he gets up, takes leave of absence. It's extraordinary to me. I became a Christian when she was reading the Bible to prove it was all rubbish. She was a committed atheist. By the time she'd read it three times, the Bible, to prove it was rubbish, Jesus had ambushed her as well. Became a Christian. It wasn't that she was looking for him, but suddenly something happened. And here it is. Here's Levi getting on, seeing how he can rake in more money, and Jesus says, follow me, crumbs. He's asking him for a completely new style with Jesus' values and a new relationship with Jesus. He says, come on, I want you to do stuff with me. That's what being a Christian is, doing stuff with him who knows best because he made us. And the extraordinary thing is, there was an immediate response. He doesn't sit down and say, oh, I've got to think about this for a while. He says, yeah, let's go for it. And he does go for it. And the extraordinary thing is, the next sentence, it says, they're all having dinner together at his place. In other words, you've got a two thing here, because Jesus doesn't go to places, force his way in. He only comes if he's invited. So Jesus says, follow me. And Levi says, come to my place. And he comes to his place and he has dinner. And they are really quite a lot in dinner there. He describes them in these sort of words of the time. They're fixedly and they're messed up people. The people who are working the system, the people who've got a guilty conscience, and the people that they're buying in to entertain them. And in the midst of this, there's Jesus, and not only Jesus, but those who are following him, who are learning to do stuff like him, and they're there together. And Jesus is at home there. Sometimes, occasionally, people say to me, I'm not good enough. I'm too messed up. I've made my bed, I must lie in it now. When you read a story like this, it tells us that whoever you are, and however messed up you are, and however much it's your own silly fault, Jesus is the friend of the right man. I find that just so encouraging. I'd run away from Christianity otherwise. Years ago, somebody came to this church and he said to me afterwards, "Yes, your church is a bit like a hospital. Loads of broken people being put together." But no, me. Quite an interesting thought. And somebody else came and said, "Are you all related? But there are one or two families that multiply rather exponentially in the church, but most of us, not really." And she said to me, "Well, you're like one big family." And here you see it with Levi. Levi is not a typical church type at all, but he's part of the gang. And they're all having dinner at his place. It's probably a bit of a celebration. And Jesus is there, like a family. "Follow me," he says, "come to my place." And Levi says, "Come to my place and come to my people." Don't you reckon that's good? Just notice in closing, there are two critical questions. He says, "Who can forgive sins but God alone?" That's what they say about the paralytic. "And why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" Jesus says, "This is what I'm all about." The end of what was read to us, it says this: Jesus said to them, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but those who are ill. I haven't come for the righteous, but sinners." And if you read on through the book, he later explains it like this: "I didn't come to be served, but to serve, and to give my life as a ransom for many." He said, "I came to clear up mess." He said, "I came to pay for people to be set free, a ransom." And actually, if you read to the end of it, when he dies on a cross, executed, paid for us. And Mark says, the barrier in the temple that said you can't come in was ripped in two from top to bottom. He says in the words, one who brings peace with God and begins to sort us out. I like that phrase, "I'm a doctor that's come for the list." I read an article in the paper the other day, it said men don't want to go to the doctor. As a man, I can vouch for that being true. And again and again and again, the medics say, "If only you had come earlier, or another unnecessary death." And so often in life we say, "I'm okay and I can manage. I'll be all right." And people say that in relation to God. "I'll be all right. I can manage this myself. I don't need this." The good news is, no, you can't. You're not designed for that. The God who made you to know him and do stuff with him and get sorted with him. Don't leave this until it's too late. Here to fix and seeing a GP is these days. There's no 8 a.m. lottery to get through. There's no secretary convinced that you really need help. There are no long waiting lists. One day you may get fixed. Not with Jesus, the doctor, no. No, one day. and be with them. It's for you as quick as it was for Levi. Follow me, come to me. What do you reckon? If you know someone who says, we've had quite a few of our young people who said, no, now I've become older, it's not for me. Well, thanks for coming anyway. Thanks for honouring your friend. Your friend invited you. But are you sure it's not for you? Some of you say you want to find out more. Can I have the first of the two slides, please? Finding out more, I want to suggest you there are two things to do. Read the book. Read the book of the bloke who knows. And I want to suggest you that you download the app Holy Bible on your phone. And then you flick through to NIV UK and you'll get it in decent modern English. And you can read it there for yourself. If you haven't got a phone that can download the app, and it's a free app, then I can give you this, but it's a really grotty version, but it's all I've got on my bookshelf at the moment. But read, just mark story, and underline the bits that give you a buzz, and put a question mark by the bits that you think, and then ask the question what you think. So the first thing is, check it out, what is really on offer. The second thing is, when you think you're ready, experiment by talking to it. And that's why I said, and it's on the table over there, get the book by playing and give it a go and see what he can do. And maybe he will do something for you. There was one guy, he said, do you know what? He did the miracle for me. He said, but I'm not a Christian, and I'm not going to become a Christian because I've got too many responsibilities with my family that will clash with it. I thought, blow me, he's done the experiment, but he hasn't followed it through to get to the right conclusion. But you can experiment. Just check it out what Jesus is like, and then you may want to say, just do that. Maybe, and just possibly, there may be some people there who would say, like Levi, I'm really up to it. I want to say yes to you. I want to say to you, that's where you're at. Just check. Do you really want him and his friends to do? Do you really? Tell him to check. God's friend. When you say that, I say, thank you. You want to have fun. I do that because once the guy's in China, I think I want to talk to him now, which means. So sometimes we're a bit lost for words, so. It's actually very easy to talk to you. A friend of mine said, really, to say three words, sorry, thank you, and please. And I put it second to my feet. In a prayer like this, which you could pray, or if you wanted to, you could take a screenshot of it to a candy patient or my baby. But I'm going to pray now as if I was the only folk in this room. If you want to, you can say it as well and make it your yes. I'm just going to do that. Sorry. Sorry, Lord. You came to make people right. Sorry for all that's wrong. I don't want to go on without you. Thank you. Thank you that you love people like me. Thank you. My shame and died for it for me. Thank you, you are alive and here today. Please give me your spirit to change my life. Please, I want to really experience your love and help. Oh Jesus, please accept me now as I talk. Part of your community, your family, learning to be what you want.
You want to talk more about holographic with fashion space and create the fashion. This is these are available, like try praying, ask, yes, you want to say yes. And there's two ways to live in Chinese, if you prefer it.